Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast, bringing you worldwide experts from all areas of health and fitness. We cover training, nutrition, coaching, and mindset. Welcome your host, strength and conditioning coach, 2012 and 2013 CrossFit Games champ, Michael Cashew. Mind, body, brute.
Hey, and welcome back. My name is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guest is Nicole Carroll. Nicole has been with CrossFit since the very beginning and even has the workout Nicole named after her. She's the head of the CrossFit seminar staff, which coaches tens of thousands of aspiring athletes and coaches worldwide every single year. You may have heard her in the CrossFit Open Tip videos or seen her speak at the end of the CrossFit Games. In this show, we talk about her early days and even her first CrossFit class with Coach Glassman. We talk about why she gave up her dream of going to grad school for art to be a personal trainer, the importance of focusing on both quality and quantity in your nutrition. Talk about the direction that CrossFit is going in fighting chronic disease, and a very powerful story that she has to share that led to her becoming so personally invested in this cause. And then we finish out by talking about leadership and balancing career with the rest of your life. Before we get started, if you've been a longtime listener of the show and haven't done so already, please head to iTunes and leave me a quick review. If you're new to the show and haven't done so already, please head to the website, brutestrengthtraining.com, sign up for the newsletter. That's where we're going to keep you up to date on all of the podcasts that we're putting out, videos, blog articles, and any program launches. Enjoy the show. Nicole, what's up? Thanks for joining me.
Hey.
So I want to start here. I know that before our call, you didn't realize what place you were in the open.
Yeah.
And I let you know that you are in 82nd in the Southwest region in the open division, and you're 58th in the world in the 40 to 44 year old division. So first off, Are you going to do the qualifier, and what will you do if you end up qualifying for the games?
Okay. I will not do the qualifier because I test the workouts. So, I mean, you know, most people know I do the tips and I demo the workouts. And so I know them in advance of everybody else, mm-hmm. with the exception of 18.5. And so my sort of commitment is that, you know, I just do that because I like being the guinea pig and somebody that people can learn from and get to do in a very, very general sense, a little bit of coaching. And, just in terms of fairness, I feel like, I won't take a qualifying spot.
Totally.
So even for the master's qualifier, I'll just pull myself out of that and, you know, the top 200 or whatever. So I'm sort of done at the open, and I'm super good with that.
Gotcha. So how do you really feel about foregoing the possibility of competing at the games? Do you really like being the guinea pig that much that you're willing to kill your chances of competing at the CrossFit Games?
Yes, that's very intense. But I really enjoy doing the tips and, like you said, being the guinea pig and being able to give whatever I can in terms of helping people do as well as they can in the open by giving tips and showing a demo and kind of like, hey, however you want to gauge yourself in relation to me that might help you do as well as you can do going into this thing. That's really actually super, super satisfying to me. And very selfishly, it allows me the opportunity to connect with our community in a way that I don't get to so much anymore because my work is so behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. excuse me. And, you know, I'm very, very much obviously still involved, and there's people I work with day in and day out, and I'm super immersed in CrossFit, but the open, it just gives me this really special opportunity to almost do the stuff just this very sort of visceral, like tangible, like, hey, this is what I fell in love with.
Right.
And so I enjoy that. And also I don't have real ambitions to compete. You gotcha. Know, that's not a driving force for me in terms of working out or a life goal or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what really resonates with me that I think I heard you saying is you really get to feel the impact that you're having on people. And I think in general, like the higher up people get in an organization, the less connection they have with the actual people at the bottom, right? The clients, yep. The athletes. And so I would assume through this, you get to interact either in person or via social media with all of the people that are learning from these videos that you're making.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's, it's super special to me. I really, I do. I really enjoy it a lot.
That's awesome. So my second question about this is, so you, I know that you travel all over the world almost constantly. You're incredibly busy with your job, yet you're obviously finding the time, making the time to train and stay consistent. So do you have any advice for people that are struggling to stay consistent with their training that either have full-time careers, they have kids, a lot of travel, or a combination of those?
Yeah, I do struggle a lot with consistency actually because of traveling. And I think that's just it though, is that the consistency is key. And I think it's not placing these super high expectations of you're going to go into the gym and, you know, it's like just think in terms of that step of getting yourself in there and maybe choose something that is very easy for you to do, very kind of almost welcoming. For me, it's very much like if I can get myself to a class, that's just the step that I need to take to kind of get it done. Once I'm in the class and I just get to listen to somebody telling me what to do and with the energy of the other people in there, then it's like I can just get out of my own way and get it done. And I think just finding that and really just keeping the expectation down to, hey, just go in and move.
Right.
You know? And that's it. And whatever happens, happens. But all you need to do is just kind of get in there and take that first step to get moving. And the rest sort of takes care of itself.
I hear a lot of people listening to this already thinking like how simple that is and like that, you know, it's not, there's nothing to what you just said, but I want to highlight how truly powerful that kind of mindset shift actually is. And as you were saying this, one of the first, like that was literally the first, I think, like behavioral hack that I learned when I started doing CrossFit in 2009 or 2010. It was just show up at the gym and the rest is a bonus, right? The hardest part for me in the beginning was just getting in the car and going to the gym. Once I was there, magic started to happen. And what I'm getting out of what you just said right here, right now, is literally, so if you're a super busy person, as so many of us are these days, just focus on creating this bright line, this thing that is just ingrained in you. You never compromise on it. Just get to the gym and the rest is, it's just going to happen, right? If we get to the gym, we're probably going to work our ass off. We're going to compete against people and we're going to reach the results that we're working so hard for. So I think that's a super powerful hack or just way to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So I want to talk about how you got into CrossFit in the first place. You are one of the OGs. You have a workout named after you. Let's go all the way back to the beginning. So your first class I know was with Coach Glassman. Can you tell us a little bit about that story and even what he was like as a coach?
Yeah, it's kind of uneventful. My first class was really, I remember it involved, excuse me. I remember it involved running, sorry, I'm a little sick, running pull-ups and push-ups. And Coach Glassman was running it. And I think what I remember most about it was not so much him initially as the other women in the class with me, and looking around, and I was a lot younger then, obviously. This was 13 or 14 years ago. And coming in and thinking, oh, I'm fit, you know, relatively. I'd played sports, I'd been in gyms kind of my whole life, and generally I would go into a fitness class and like I could hang, you know. Mm-hmm. Just sort of it and this was, you know, there were women in the class doing pull-ups and doing things, and I was just looking at them like, wow, I can't do that, and I should be able to. I should be able to do what these women can do, and I want to be able to do what they can do. And that was really the most impactful thing about that first class, was just kind of that challenge and just seeing. I mean, it's kind of maybe very different now, but at that time, seeing women do pull-ups like that was pretty significant. I didn't have pull-ups mm-hmm. when I first started. Maybe one kicking and screaming, you know, but certainly not like, you know, 10 in a workout type of thing. And so that's really what stands out the most for me, the first class.
So what was it about seeing these women do these things that you couldn't do that really impacted you? Was it simply you believed that you could do more pull-ups because they could, or was there something kind of greater at play?
Well, I think very simply at that time, it was more of just this kind of like, you know, jock mentality, like, hey, I want to be able to do what you can do. And if you can do it, you know, I should be able to do it. There was a lot of, it's interesting that that's how my experience started, because I think as I went through, there was a lot more powerful stuff around being a woman, being in CrossFit, and the impact that I saw CrossFit having on, well, that I felt it having on myself, and then that I saw it having, especially on my clients. So initially it was a very sort of superficial thing, I think, for me. And then as I got deeper into it, it became much, much more significant of a thing.
Yeah, I think this is a broad generalization, but I think almost everyone probably has a very similar experience where they come in for these, you know, as you're saying, superficial wants/desires. And then without even being able to articulate what's going on, we get all of those other benefits, right? We feel more confident in ourselves. We see women in a different light, right? We see strong and muscular women as being sexy and beautiful. We, you know, we look at our overall health and longevity in a different light. So we get all of these things just by participating in the discipline.
Yeah. Yeah. I really, I think that's a very, very, that became something very, very significant for me, was that you could then, and especially as a trainer, as a trainer, seeing clients, you know, and again, I know the stories are somewhat a dime a dozen, but seeing clients do things that they didn't think they could do, especially female clients, and feeling for myself and watching it happen, where you sort of bypass your brain with your body, and it informs the rest of your being, right? Where you're, like you said, emotionally stronger. I remember like 6 months into CrossFitting regularly, and just waking up one morning and putting my feet on the earth and feeling like my relationship to the earth is different. I feel stronger. I feel like I'm standing taller. I feel just like something is different. And it was, you know, kind of physical and metaphysical. And I've seen that happen over and over again. And I love that, because I love the simplicity and the practicality of it, where you kind of don't have to get into it. You just kind of have to work hard, right? And Yeah. And I think as a trainer, being a facilitator of that, it changed my life, you know, to be able to be part of other people having that experience of themselves.
Right. What was it like over time? Do you think it's, how do I want to put this? So you were coached by Coach Glassman for your first little bit, right? What was it like having someone that high quality teaching you on a regular basis?
Extremely painful.
Nice.
I don't know what it is. Well, Greg can put the hurt on like no one else. I mean, he really, like, it became over time. He pulled out of, you know, so I guess he coached him and Lauren. They coached all the classes and they had for years. And yeah, I mean, they were, they were intense, you know? And, I mean, you just look at the pull-up and the thruster, just look at what he did there. I mean, we all just went through it and I was thinking about it yesterday. Like, it's an amazing combination and it's still to this day, like 13 years later, it's still as potent and powerful and horrible. And that's the man that came up with that. Like that is that, that's the mind. And it was just like that whenever, you know, towards, as I got years in and Greg came out of training more, every so often he'd be like, "Hey Nicole, I want to train you today." And I was just like, "No," because I knew it was just going to hurt so bad.
So you've been the guinea pig for 13 years.
I don't know that. Well, oh yeah, that's funny. Like I'm comfortable being the guinea pig, but yeah, that's hilarious. I guess from the start, I was, you know, my first role at seminars was a demo athlete. So before I was even training or instructing at them, the early on, you know, and Annie Sakamoto was the same, where it was kind of like our our job was really at that time, our job was to beat the boys. Mm-hmm. You know, there were men that would come in that hadn't been training CrossFit and we'd been training CrossFit for a year or more and we could do it. And so there was kind of a proof of concept that, just kind of these 5'2", you know, Santa Cruz chicks could, you know, all the military guys that came in and stuff like that. That was our first job. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, in terms of kind of experimenting or being experimented on, I remember some of that, different things with Fran. I remember, let's go heavier. Let's see what happens. You know, let's do it at 95, break it up this way. And, you know, incredibly, like one of those things where you're in it and you don't know anything other than that it hurts and you're just listening to what you're told.
Right.
But I think in terms of an education, you know, just something I'm so appreciative of now, just having had that exposure and, just that firsthand experience with obviously someone so incredibly talented and, brilliant, really.
So at the time you were dead set on going into art school before ended up training your first client. So what happened there?
Yeah. So I was, putting myself through school, wanted to go to graduate school for ceramics actually. And that's what I'd been doing really for the previous 10 years. Just all things art. And even still, I had been training myself and it was great and I was enjoying it, but I wasn't looking at it as a vocation. But then I took my level one and they had a program at CrossFit Santa Cruz that was like an internship program. And so you train people kind of underneath Greg and Lauren, then you train some people for free, and then you kind of go out and you get your first clients. And I was like, okay, well, this whole thing beats the hell out of waiting tables. So let's see what happens. And, And I just remember really my first paid client. And she was a district manager at Starbucks and just a really, really wonderful human being. But it was that same thing of just kind of taking her through this workout and having that hour with her of really coaching and just facilitating this experience for someone that is just so clearly beneficial. And then at the end of it, like being handed $50 was like, are you kidding me? You know, this is
paid you to do this.
Yeah. Like you're going to pay me to do this. And, you know, so there was that element of it where I was like, I was really, I mean, I was like, okay, I can do this. And this is what I want to do. This is way more fulfilling than anything I'd done before, you know? And, you know, the thing too of coming from an art background is you spend a lot of time indulging in yourself as an artist, really. And I think that's awesome. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think that's where great art comes from. But I think there was also something of just like a deep satisfaction and pull towards stepping outside of that and being able to give something to someone else. And then, yeah, again, as a vocation, like, wow, I can, it's so deeply satisfying and I can actually make a living doing it. Mm-hmm. And from there, it really snowballed into, you know, groups. I mean, I still remember like my first group of clients and I had, you know, just how it worked out, not intentionally, you know, just a whole like 10 a.m. class of women. And I'll never forget those women and the impact that they had, just on me in terms of, hey, yeah, wow, this is what I want to do. And I just want to keep giving this, you know? And then the other piece of it was being in the place at the time and being part of CrossFit at that time. I mean, I've never been a part of a startup, obviously. I've never been a part of any other company's initial phases, but I've heard a lot about it. And I think that's what was going on, right? And it's like it's a very, very passionate people and you're kind of doing everything to keep things running and get the business going and the seminars and it's just, it just was so fun, right? It's just so fun and so satisfying. Right? And it just felt very right. I mean, I still love art and I think it's an interesting thing because as I'm getting older, I try to bring it more into my life. Like, you know, one of your questions was kind of about that. Like, what are you working on? And it's like, well, balance and development. And a lot of that for me has a lot to do with art and kind of digging back into some of that I know is also deeply satisfying to me. Mm-hmm. But the choice to let that go and go in the direction I went in, I also know that was a right choice. Like, there's no regret there. It was so naturally, this is it. Like, you know, like this is, just got it. I got it, life. I got this. You know what I mean? I'll take that. And thank you. And so.
Right. I love that this is where this conversation has gone. I've had a similar conversation with a few people about the power of contribution and how we are hardwired to want to serve other people. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what I heard from what you just shared is that you just found more meaning in being able to help people transform their lives through fitness, right? You really, really had a significant impact on them and that had a significant impact on you.
Absolutely. Yep.
So you, in general, you believe that CrossFit, and I'm kind of using your own words here, that CrossFit is a baseline for health. And what you started to talk about earlier that I'm hoping you can unpack a little bit more is that the physical can inform the emotional and psychological. What do you mean by that?
I'll start with the physical informing. It's like, I just think it's all connected, you know, and you start getting physically stronger. You just start doing things that you think you can't do. You know what I mean? Pick up, for some people, it's, you don't deadlift 55 pounds, right? Or 15 pounds, or, and I just think there's like a systemic, for lack of a better way to articulate this, there's a systemic goodness to functional movements executed at high intensity. And I also think diet's a big part of that. And I feel like my baseline without CrossFit is much lower. You know, I don't think that I honestly, and I know I wrote about this a little bit too, like in terms of who I am, I'm kind of introverted. You know what I mean? I don't think necessarily this exceptionally, extraordinarily happy person or full of positivity or anything like that. Not negativity necessarily, but I think I had a lot more tendency towards being, I don't know how to describe it, but just not as happy of a human being and not as capable of a human being before CrossFit. And it had a very therapeutic effect on my life. And so I'm super passionate about sharing that, and about that, I think it can do that for everyone without, I'm always hesitant because obviously I'm biased, you know, in terms of CrossFit, and I don't mean it in a dogmatic way. You know, I don't mean that you can't, hey man, if you want to do some powerlifting and call it, like, you know, I don't mean it in terms of like, it's the only way, but it is a way that I know, and it's a way that I relate to because of my own experience. And so, you know, it's just something that anybody that I care about in the world, I wish that they would do it. Mm-hmm. Because I think it just elevates your baseline of being emotional, physical, the way you feel about yourself in the world. It's just, it just changes. I think it just makes life better. It really does.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's, and it really does go so far beyond the physical. You know, on one hand, you have the collaboration and the competition with yourself and between other people. You have this thing that you're talking about where you didn't think you could lift something before or do a certain amount of pull-ups, and all of a sudden you can. And one of the things that I teach people about a lot is your mindset in one area of your life is your mindset in every area of your life, right? We can't just have the mind of a champion when it comes to the gym, right? It's got to be in our career and relationship, et cetera, if it's going to be sustainable. So yeah. When we change our mindset through these physical accomplishments, it carries over to the rest of our life, whether we want it to or not. And I think that's one of the things that's so special about CrossFit.
Yes, that's the thing. You don't even have to, you don't even have to choose it.
Right.
You can do it in the gym in a very controlled setting, in a very physical, straightforward way. And it informs the rest of you, which can sometimes feel like such a tangled mess, right? Like, it's just, it cuts through all that. And it's like, all of a sudden, hey, you're just making some better choices, or you're loving yourself a little more, you know, or you're feeling like, you know what, I deserve better than this, or, you know, like, I can do this. And you don't even have to know why. It's just happening. And, I just think that's really freaking cool, you know?
Totally. Yeah, we really build integrity with ourselves when we show up to the gym and eat well consistently, right? We say that we want to change our bodies, we want to be stronger, more capable, and then we follow through on that commitment to ourselves. Then we trust ourselves that we can do that in other areas of our lives. So we might see weaknesses or things that we want to work on, and we finally believe that we can actually make that change because of the change that we've made in our life through CrossFit or through nutrition.
Yes.
So do you have a good sense of how CrossFit affiliates are programming these days as a whole? And I want to preface this by saying, in the majority of gyms that I drop into, I see some kind of block programming going on where people are focusing on, they're doing a strength phase and an endurance phase, or they're doing like a bunch of skills and drills before. So I guess my question is really, how do you, is that what you're seeing? Are you having that same experience? And if so, what do you think about that? And what can we do about it?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure that I have honestly a broad enough experience to make that assessment. I think what I most think we need to do about it is just make sure that, and I think affiliates do this great, and it's CrossFit's for everyone, and I think some of the nuances of programming are not entirely, but almost irrelevant. And I think if you, of course, I'm a big fan of classic CrossFit programming. You know, like I don't want to harken back and to the days of, you know, I think it can, at its extreme, it can start looking a lot like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we do strength training, and Tuesday, Thursday, we do cardio. Mm-hmm. I think for sure you can get into an excessive volume for the average person, which is probably 99.9% of the clients at an affiliate. That is just it's just entirely unnecessary and potentially even blunts the adaptation, because you're robbing those people of intensity,
right?
Because they're seeing, oh my God, I have to do all of this in an hour, so I need to pace myself through the whole thing. And it's really, we all know, I mean, the intensity is where the results are. And so I am super biased towards, I mean, even for myself, I don't do super special programming. I like group classes. I like classic CrossFit programming. I like one workout a day. Go hard. I can, you know what I mean? Like skill work. Yes, sure. You know what I mean? Depending on where I'm at. But I think that is, it's enough.
I totally agree with you. And I didn't realize that until, I guess, a couple years ago. And I almost bought a gym, one of the Ute CrossFit gyms from Tommy Hackenbrook a few years ago. And at that time, we had like a very structured, like strength and gymnastics kind of protocol before all of the workouts. And what I thought I was doing was giving people more of what they wanted and even needed. I thought they needed some more structured programming. And then reflecting on it, say a year or two later, after I had decided not to buy that gym, I realized exactly what you're saying, that people couldn't go as hard because they were so, like, and the intensity of the workout suffered because they were already exhausted from doing four sets of six deadlifts and bench press, right? Yeah. And so my intentions were absolutely in the right place, but I just didn't realize that one of the main tenets of CrossFit is done at high intensity. And I was really robbing people of that intensity. So for me, I think and for a lot of people, I think it takes a little bit of humility and patience in the coach, from the coach's perspective. And then also to be able to educate the community as to why you're only doing, you know, 21, 15, 9 of whatever the movements are, and you're not doing a lot extra, and sharing them the benefits long-term of what they're going to get from that. And like I said, I didn't realize that until after the fact. So I think it's just kind of a learning process for a lot of people.
Yeah. It's why I actually love, you know, we've been putting out a lot more lesson planning stuff mm-hmm. with through CrossFit. And I love it because I think it shows, hey, yeah, maybe you do have just 21:15:9 and, you know, and it seems like, wow, it's only going to be about 10 minutes, but hey, here's a warm up. Here's a general warm up, a specific warm up to get people moving well and correctly and assessing and scaling, workout, cool down, maybe even some skill work, all in an hour. It doesn't have to be jam packed from start to finish. And it's like you said, you train your clients not to appreciate intensity and by taking that away from them. And then, yeah, and then you have to dig yourself out of that hole and help them understand, you know what I mean? No. It won't be for long. You give people 2 weeks at high intensity, it's just like the diet. You're going to feel the benefit. Yeah. You're going to feel the difference. And obviously relatively high and all that stuff. But yeah, it's – so I don't know if that answered the question, but it was a good –
I don't even remember what the question was. I think we were just talking.
It doesn't matter.
So the general CrossFit philosophy on nutrition is a paleo diet. And I firmly believe that when most people adapt such a diet, their lives are immediately better. Mm-hmm. With that said, what is being done or what are your thoughts on portion control, and is CrossFit as an organization doing anything to educate people about portion control? Because we can be on a paleo diet and still be unhealthy by grossly overeating, and it, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people just have really poor habits and things like that. So what are your views, and what is CrossFit doing about it?
Yeah, well, right from the start, I mean, CrossFit. Well, one thing we don't. I would say that a paleo diet is not exactly, and again, I know paleo is defined in a lot of different ways, but if you want to take it to the truest sense where no dairy, no grains, industrial oils, processed meats, that's not exactly what CrossFit. So just in terms of the level one material, you know, it's meats and vegetables, nuts and seeds, some fruit, little starch, no sugar, which, you know, it's still, there's still room for grains. There's still room for dairy. A lot of what we say at the level one is to play with those things in terms of your sensitivity. Dairy could work really, really well for some people, but maybe not for other. Same with grains. And then in terms of quantity, from the time I've been involved in CrossFit, quantity has been huge. And, you know, really what we've done and what Coach Glassman sort of proposed right from the start was something like the zone diet in terms of proportions, right? That it's a 40-30-30, 40% carbohydrate, 30% protein, 30% fat. Mm-hmm. And the way that we teach it at the level one is that you want quality and quantity. Both of those are equally as important. And that you want to have enough food that supports exercise but not body fat.
Right.
And essentially, you know, again, that you're taking those meats and vegetables, nuts and seeds, some fruit, little starch, and you're plugging it into that quantity kind of formula. And we'll baseline people with the zone. But then also kind of say, hey, give this 2 to 4 weeks, and what you're gonna have out of that is a whole bunch of data about you know, what you've done, how you've eaten, what you've eaten, how much, and also how you feel, you know, how you're performing, what's your body fat like, how's your body responding. And then from there, you can actually make some meaningful changes to what you're doing to support your goals better and better. So, you know, I think really it's, again, it's a very kind of non-dogmatic, but it, other than the fact that they're both equally as important.
That's a great answer. Yeah, I love it. So let's talk about the direction that CrossFit's going in battling chronic disease, going up against big soda and stuff like that, because I know that that's something that you're really passionate about.
Yeah.
If you're open to sharing it, and totally cool if not, you mentioned that there is a story about your mom that kind of caused you to become so personally invested in this.
Yeah, I'm open to it. What CrossFit, there's a couple things about what CrossFit is doing with regards to health. We're doing free level ones for doctors every other month, and I just love that. And that's the piece that's I probably have the most kind of connection to with regard to what you're saying. But then also really this message and pushing like it, that CrossFit is for everyone. Like I get almost personally frustrated when people, you know, you'll where it's like, I'm not ready for CrossFit, or I'm not fit enough or CrossFit. And it's like, I just think that's so not true. You know, we have what we've said always is, you know, the needs of our grandparents differ by degree, not kind, and infinitely scalable. And it's like, hey, those aren't just cool little sound bites. It's really, really true. You can put anyone through a CrossFit workout, anyone. There are no limitations other than your own ability to preserve the stimulus as best you can and acknowledge what's in front of you and take that person through the functional movements. You know what I mean? And it's so I'm really, really excited that we've turned the volume up on that message. And I'm super proud to be part of that. I'm super excited for it. And, you know, happy to be one of the loudest voices for it. It just is, it's so, so important. And then the other piece about the doctors is, you know, my mom has had gone through three kind of recurrences of lung cancer.
Wow.
And she was a smoker. She had quit. She'd been not smoking for about 20 years, but then ended up getting lung cancer anyway. And I've sat through a lot of doctor's appointments with her. And one of the things that floored me was the unwillingness for any doctor, oncologist, you know, respiratory, any doctor to make a strong statement to her that her lifestyle choices mattered. That you know, other than, you know, maybe a little bit around, hey, go for a walk or try to move, or strongest statement I could get was out of an oncologist, because I'm always in her ear about, you know, just better life choices, better dietary choices. You know, I was raised in Italian family, lots of breads, lots of pastas, you know, and I think my mom definitely has a sugar addiction like so many people do. And so I'm always kind of in her ear, but I'm her crazy CrossFit trainer daughter. You know what I mean? Like, of course I'm going to say right. That
you're just overly intense and
yeah. And you know, obviously my mom loves me and you know what I mean? It's not that she doesn't respect me, but I think when you're talking about, I think about it this way too. When you're talking about a person's addiction, no matter what, I mean, and this is kind of the tragedy of addiction, is that if there's any wiggle room to give your addiction the benefit of the doubt, you will do that. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was like, you know, maybe it's not the heroin, you know, it's like, guess what? People wouldn't, you know, the doctor's not, he said, maybe it's not, you know, maybe something else, or maybe I can take these pills and it'll help me get better, or that you're not going to do it. And it's just, and it's no criticism. It's something I think on some level, we all have addictive tendencies, is why habits are so important, right? Developing good habits, getting addicted to those. And so for my mom, the fact that no doctor, the most she could get out of a doctor was, you know, when she asked if she should stop eating as much sugar, or eat differently or eat better, it was like, well, it can't hurt. And it's kind of like, hey, that's not going to cut it, because here's a person who, they are in one of the most frightening situations of their life, literally fighting for their life. And I think for some people, one of their singular greatest comforts can be food, mm-hmm. and especially sugar. And, you know, my mom, we had a conversation, a really serious conversation, and I said, just try it, you know, just try eating differently. Let's get off the sugar. Let's, you know, try just meats and vegetables. And she looked at me and she said, I guess I just have to feel like it's worth it. And at that point, like, really was a heartbreaking moment for me, because I thought, what's more worth it than your life? And it really made me angry at the medical establishment. You know, I mean, like, it's just like, man, if sending these doctors through level ones I just think if you could get a doctor to say, hey, you know what? Yeah, it matters. It matters. You know, moving and eating, you know, eating less sugar, eating better quality foods, it matters. And so that's, yeah, it's just personally very significant to me to be part of maybe making that happen more often.
Yeah, that is so powerful. Thank you for sharing that. And I hadn't heard of what y'all are doing by the free L1s for doctors. I think that's incredible, because mm-hmm. one of the biggest issues is that this kind of information and education just isn't in their curriculum. So of course they're not going to teach it to people. They're not required to learn it, and they're not incentivized to learn anything outside of it. Right. So there are those out there that take it upon themselves to learn about functional medicine and functional movement and stuff like that and nutrition, but they're not required to or incentivized to. And this is just huge. I love that. Are you guys doing anything else similar that people might not be aware of? And specifically, I've heard more and more people talk about the last few years about the need to shift the public's perspective about CrossFit in relation to, like, the CrossFit games versus mm-hmm. what CrossFit is actually up to, right? The games are, it's entertaining, it's a sport, but that's not what CrossFit is or what CrossFit is really up to. And I love the video that you guys showed in the middle of the open announcement. I thought mm-hmm. that was amazing. It was such a powerful story and message. Are you guys doing anything else like that people need to be aware of?
I think that's it. I think it's really, that is the most significant. Like I said, just really turning up the volume on that messaging, and it's always been there, right? It's just, I think the consistency in our media and making sure that is a large part of it is showing, you know, not the 0.01%, but the 99.9%, right? Mm-hmm. And hey, look at what this is doing. And I love it too, because a lot of, right, it's, we're such simple creatures in the sense of like, hey, that person looks like me and they're doing it, so I can do it, you know, and so I love the gamut right now that we're showing in regard to, like I said, everybody, every type of person and can do this and can benefit from it. And I'm super proud of those efforts. And again, just, the direction that we're going in.
I want to ask you a couple questions about you as a leader, and I'll preface it by saying this. First off, I know that you're an introvert and you don't like talking about yourself. And then the second is that I just want to acknowledge you for being an incredible leader. I've been to a number of CrossFit seminars, L1, L2, I've even interned on the seminar staff as well. And I've just seen firsthand the quality of both how these people are teaching movement, but also how they are building people up as coaches and as athletes. And I firmly believe that if you see that level of quality consistently across any organization, that points to just great leadership. And so I want to acknowledge you for that. Now, in the kind of pre-interview questions, one of the things that you said regarding yourself as a leader is that you don't have to like everyone, but you have to love them. What do you mean by that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you. And that statement though, the not have to like everyone, but you have to love them. I think it's about, you know, you have to really, it's just about wanting the best for people, you know, and that sometimes we're human as leaders. Leaders are human too. And sometimes it's like, man, I don't like what this person is doing, or I might not even like them. But you can temper that by saying, right, I don't have to like them, but I have to love them. I have to want the best for them. And it helps me shift my focus. And I think also it can help me deliver feedback or in a much more productive way when needed. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a very nuanced piece maybe of it, but yeah, I know I did whip that little phrase off because I think about it, you know, and I think if it's kind of confronted with leadership challenges, right? And it's like, whoa, okay, right. You got to kind of find the love in terms of what's best for this person. And it's not always the easiest thing to say or the easiest thing to hear, but again, your intent and coming from the place of, hey, you know, I want you to be successful. I want you, you know, I want you to, you know, you're not getting what you want and this is why, but being able to frame it in a way that is, potentially, you know, most effective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you kind of saying as well, like as a leader, we have to be able to transcend our own kind of preferences for like, and like our own biases and ways of doing things and look at the people that are working with us and for us and be able to kind of bring out the best in them and help bring out the best in them, regardless of whether we like the way they said something or what they, you know, the kind of music they listen to, what they wear, how they live their lives. And regardless of all of that, help them become the best that they can be.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, I think the most important thing as a leader is it's not about you. You know, and so like you said, in terms of preferences and all that, and you're connecting it to a bigger picture, and especially when you have a team or a department or it's kind of like you've got to get that out of the way and see it for the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So
recently you took a 5-day break to unplug, which I think was the longest that you've taken in like 13 years.
Yes.
What was that experience like for you, and what triggered it?
It was great. I mean, I went to the Cayman Islands, so that's great. It was beautiful and warm. I think really what triggered it was just a couple friends, Chris and Andrea Smith, and they just amazing people, and they were kind of pressuring me and Tosh to go on vacation with them. And so it was like actually having other people to commit to and say, okay, we're doing it on these dates, and you know, you've made plans now, so with other humans, so you can't,
right. Like, you're accountable to that now.
We're doing it. And And, you know, so that was really in terms of what initiated it, probably that was really what it was. And then just feeling like I wanted to take a break, and I hadn't taken a real intentional break. I mean, it's not like, you know, there's always, I think if you have a certain kind of job, you're always sort of plugged in, you're always responsible, you're always, and it just comes with the territory. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's time that you unplug, but not necessarily days like that. It had been a really long time for that. And so yeah, it also was an experiment of like really staying away from all of that stuff, really, really consciously, like, hey, not even like going into my email, you know, and which is like, whoa. And so, yeah. And it was awesome. I mean, and really, I think what carried over, so I talked about this being and becoming thing, and Jordan Peterson, he's a Canadian clinical psychologist, right? Teaches at, I think, University of Toronto. I've just been watching and reading a lot of his stuff, and one of the things he said that really struck me was don't sacrifice what you can become for what you are. And I was like, wow, that is really powerful, because it can be so easy to do that in terms of like getting things done, mm-hmm. right? Like you're just going through and getting things done, and they're important things, and they matter to you. And it's, you know, like, it's not that it's not necessarily about wanting to significantly change my life or, you know, my, as much as it's about, you can just so easily get into that rut of getting things done versus really pushing to continue to develop as a human being. Or I can, you know, I shouldn't say the pronoun you, maybe some people are better at it than I am, but it's like I can be so committed to just what's right in front of me that I do sacrifice setting aside some time to do the things that just push me to really develop. And I know that's vague, but
no, you make perfect sense to me. And I'll share like a really concrete thing that I just realized about myself, literally exactly in line with what you're saying. So I realized that, let's take my morning routine, for instance. I realized that I have such a jam-packed morning routine. It consists of meditation, journaling, reading some philosophy, reading some fiction, sometimes doing some other types of reflection, moving, doing some yoga. Like, it's really jam-packed. Uh-huh. And I've been super, super consistent with it, all under the kind of belief that I'm doing this to like work on myself and to grow, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm so like future focused that, and this is the realization that I had a couple of days ago, I've had a really hard time being present with any of those things that I was doing. So if I'm meditating, I'm thinking about, you know, getting ready for journaling in a second. If I'm journaling, I'm getting ready for reading, and I'm not really taking the time to be present with what I'm actually doing. And yeah. If I'm understanding you correctly, you're having a similar experience where you're so future focused and growth focused that, you know, you're not as present and living life in the now as much as you could and want to.
Yeah. For sure. Yes.
Yeah. There's something. Yeah. I try to practice more just being okay with doing things to do them and to experience them rather than to work on myself or for some other goal outside of just that experience. Right?
Yeah.
Like just go to the park to play, just to play. Right. I love spike ball, and I could look at it as like, oh, I'm developing this new physical skill and like get really into it that way. Or I can just go and play and have fun. And that's the whole experience. It's a great time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Another thing that I heard a while back that I'm really thinking about a lot lately is that as a society, we're constantly exhaling, right? We're constantly doing and trying to be more without inhaling, without that rejuvenation type of time. And I think especially in Western society, we think of that as like laziness, like taking time for ourselves, taking rejuvenation time or like a 5-day break as laziness or like indulgent. But I'm trying to see it more as like that this is actually a part of me being the best version of myself, and even seeing it as part of my work. If I'm constantly just go, then my intensity is just going to go down. I have to rest in order to keep the intensity and productivity as high as possible. So I'm trying to look at it from more of a balanced perspective, which I think is kind of what you're saying as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, burnout is a very real thing too. And I think, definitely the rejuvenation and I think some of it too, in terms of like being and becoming, is like being present. Yes. But also, just a little bit of having that space for, I don't know, hearing some other stuff and I think that's the key. That's what with rejuvenation, it's like, that's what it is you're just giving yourself a little bit of more space and, you can, yeah, it's refreshing. It's, you learn new things about yourself and can bring more balance by sort of pushing these other maybe facets of yourself. And they're not outside. I mean, they can be integrated back, but, I don't know. It's an interesting, like, kind of feel like I'm going around and around a little bit, but yeah, I liked taking time off. I intend to do more of it.
Nice. I'm glad. I'm very happy to hear that. Okay. I've got a few rapid fire questions for you before we wrap it up.
Okay.
One, what book have you given most often as a gift or recommended to others?
Oh man. Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
Love that book. What is one action that you'd recommend people take immediately?
These are hard. I don't know. Oh, one action that I recommend people take immediately. Go hug someone you love.
I think that's pretty solid. Express some gratitude.
Yes.
Love it. Nicole, this has been phenomenal. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're super busy and I don't take that lightly. So thank you for making some time for me. Where can people keep up with you on social media?
Oh, I guess really just Instagram is kind of all I do, and just at Nicole Carroll.
And that's CARROLL.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess we should spell Nicole too. NICOLECARROLL. Both of those can be spelled several ways.
True. Very true. Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. And I've definitely enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you so much, Nicole. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Your journey towards better fitness continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com to connect with Michael and his guests. Access links and resources mentioned in this episode, as well as bonus content exclusive to podcast listeners. That's brutestrengthtraining.com.